For purposes of recording, I will state that we are officially doing a review of HART InterCivic voting system for about 15 minutes.
Well, I think whatever we get, it will be a fixed. I mean, there are always upgrades that are done down the road to systems. I mean, many of the systems we have here in the state now have been upgraded many times from what they were in 2003 and 2004 when we put them in. But you know, they're proposing a specific version of their system, which will be the certified version, and any changes to that have to go through certification.
Okay, folks, the 15 minutes are up. So I'd like to go ahead and open the floor for comments and discussion about Hart InterCivics proposal. Carol?
I think somewhere in that I saw that they don't have an existing relationship with Colorado, and yet I was under the impression that several counties are currently using Hart.
There's 45 counties also in here.
Oh, because at the front it said that they don't. And so I was, what has happened? Because I thought there were many.
Page one of the overview.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that was corrected because that bothered me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Harvey.
Yeah, so a knowledge of existing Hart systems may or may not be helpful in understanding this proposal. And that's what I'm trying to grasp this point. All the names have been changed of all the components of the Hart system, if they resemble the previous version, so I have to assume they don't. But in fact, the sample reports in here actually use the old Hart names, which makes me wonder whether these sample reports were generated by the new system. For example, it says BOSS. You know, BOSS was the old ballot layout, and election locked for Tally. Tally was the name of the tabulation software, whereas the new one is called something else. So those are two very general. Now I'm curious about the unique identifying number issue in Hart, because that was where the Colorado actually changed its course in the last couple of years to remove the unique identifying number off the ballot, which Hart was providing. And it was actually providing a useful function, which was to help connect the paper ballot to the scan of the ballot, which would appear on the resolution screen in Hart Ballot Now. And having removed that, the uniqueness of that serial number, even though the serial number still exists, as far as I know, on most or maybe all implementations of Hart in Colorado, it's a serial number that either has very few instances or they're all the same. And so you can't actually use the serial number to very well. You can't do it. It's much less effective to go find. And my voice stopped. Okay. With this system there, I've noticed the phrase does never include unique identifying information that can be associated with a specific ballot. That's describing a cast vote record. So if that's the case, that solves the anonymity problem for the cast vote record, but it makes it impossible to use the cast vote record in a single ballot audit environment. And so, whereas Dominion has put the cast vote record on the scanned image, and we have to actually check how easy it is to get from that scanned image to the paper ballot in Dominion. In the case of Hart, they're saying there actually is no way to get from the cast vote record. At least I'm interpreting this to mean there is no way to get from the cast vote record to the paper ballot. And therefore, one would have to design a system outside of Hart to accomplish that, i.e. boxing, batching the ballots in boxes and counting down into the box by a scheme that you'd have to develop separately, if this is actually true, what I'm reading here. And I'll turn the mic over to someone else for the time being. Thanks. Well, there is something here about electronic ballot. I'm curious about the, whereas Dominion is clearly all paper ballot, no mention of electronic ballot. Here, Hart has got a mention of electronic ballot in the context of BMD and something called TouchWriter, which are the, at least one of those is the accessible unit. Apparently, Hart has still, like the previous versions that are in use in Colorado, there's a separate device for the disability community versus the other device, whatever. So apparently, there are two different types of devices, whereas Dominion apparently has one device only that serves all those purposes. But I'm curious whether the electronic ballot has, what significance it actually has, because it shows here that the, what I'm reading suggests that the disability supporting device actually produces a flat paper ballot on a COTS printer. And in which case, I would be calling that the ballot, and I would not be calling something else the electronic ballot. And so if there is actually a tabulation route, that's separate from that paper ballot that gets produced. We should be looking at that and see how that is treated separately and why, because I'm not sure that that makes, that actually solves the, it harms the anonymity problem or issue. And it's really much more desirable to have all the disability accessibility issues handled in the same manner as for all voters.
This is Patrick Davis. What I liked about the system is that it addressed the increased in-person voting facilities that we're going to be required to provide in Colorado with mobile small printing capabilities, so that you can imagine that if you're a county clerk, you might be able to afford a dozen of these small printers where you could put them at your polling place locations for same-day voting or ballot printing on site.
So, Patrick, do you mean a ballot on demand?
Yes, I do mean a ballot
device?
On demand.
Okay.
Right.
Rick or Carol, Evelyn?
No.
Well, okay. I thought I liked their Orange County experience. I liked the fact that they had teamed up with Pitney Bowes for hardware that they apparently don't provide themselves. They mentioned the source code escrow on page 4 through 5 of section 6.2. I was wondering whether Secretary of State's staff felt good about that, bad about that, but it looked like a proprietary system that I think you'll be able to look at, but it's not real clear to me that anybody else really can. That's fine. And then the training section is probably about as well developed as I've seen so far, because we've only looked at 3 proposals. But they seem to be focused on very small classes and very little internet training. Since we have 64 counties and none of the classes I noticed had more than 20 or 30 participants, it sounds to me like there could be an issue there. But I don't know that they've necessarily gone into their internet capability or not as far as the classes go. It looks very much like an in-person class situation that they're proposing. In which case, I could get pretty expensive pretty quick.
Anyone else have any comments?
I'm trying to recall exactly what meeting I attended, but I was under the impression that several of the clerks and recorders of small communities who are currently using HART felt that they were charged a great deal of money for the help that they got. And I would like to have that clearer as we look into this further.
This is Patrick. Do you mean for technical support or for training on the system?
No, I'm not talking about training. I'm talking about technical support.
Technical support.
Yeah. That's what I picked up at the meetings, okay. Although it was never truly explained.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the issues there is the that's going on right now is the upgrade of the Windows platform.
Okay.
And HART is charging to accomplish that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, so seeing no further discussion on this one, let's move along. Oh, Harvey?
Well, just for openness purposes, I will say that I have quite a bit of experience with the existing HART system. And so HART might... I'm providing the benefit of the presumption that this new system is quite different from the old system, because I'm aware of quite a number of inconveniences or user interface flaws in the old system that were very frustrating for election officials that I have observed in the course of trying to use the system. So I'd be looking for an assurance that those kinds of flaws weren't typical of this new system, but I won't go into details. But anyway, I've seen enough to know I'd be concerned about the detailed implementation of how functional it is. And of course, it's being used in 45 counties, so it's not that it's completely dysfunctional or anything like that. Just it can get confusing, and I've seen failures that were unfortunate.
Okay, we are now moving along to the next proposal. That would be ESS. We are now beginning the reading section for the ESS proposal. Okay, folks, time is up. So let's go ahead and open the proposal from ESNS Systems for discussion.
I like that they were... Got your microphone.
This is Patrick Davis. I like that they were continuously employed in Georgia statewide for 13 years with no problems, Georgia being similar to Colorado with a large metro area and then the rest of the state being fairly rural. Feels like Colorado.
Any further comments, Patrick? Carol?
I like the fact that they considered implementing in a phased cross-section of small, medium, and large counties to see what modifications would be needed. Sort of what our own pilot program is considering doing, but I liked that.
I'll throw in there a couple of comments about, just in general, the paper ballot design and everything. I guess one of the aspects that we do have to consider is accessible voting, and in the previous drafts that we've read proposals, they go into great detail about how ballots are accessible, but they're always mentioning, and maybe now I'm a little bit muddled in what we've read, but including them, they're only talking specifically about polling accessibility if folks go to a vote center. And I guess I have to ask further detail when they do the presentations, but what if an accessible voter does not want to go to a vote center, and how is it that they can vote a ballot at home and have that ballot be tabulated? And maybe I'm missing, because we've read, I think this is our fifth proposal, and they're all addressing accessibility, but they're not addressing the convenience of accessibility. And that's the one thing that I just wanted to bring up, because that's the one thing that's missing. Evelyn.
That is a subject which has been the topic of many discussions over the years. The fact that all mail elections really do disenfranchise the visually impaired and blind voter. No matter what you do, even if you read your ballot on a talking scanner, it does not show you how to or where to mark the ballot. So that is an instance. There's been talk also about online voting. That is not a secure process yet, nor do all visually impaired and blind people use computers. So it's an issue that goes beyond what any manufacturer is presently obligated to provide. And it's a legislation issue more than a machinery issue.
This is Al. And I think if you recall, our friend from Florida who participated in several of our meetings brought this up as a major concern, and the fact that there's probably going to be litigation in that area, because it's a two-ply system, and mail ballot voters don't have the option of voting accessible ballots from home.
No. In Colorado, fortunately, we still have vote centers where you can go and use an accessible voting machine and have a completely private ballot. But I don't know if that exists in all states.
And I think the issue there is that you're forcing a person with disabilities to go somewhere where another voter doesn't have to go anywhere.
That's true. It's an issue, but at least there's a provision made. And you still can have a private ballot, whereas with a completely mail ballot, I don't know of any way that I could have a totally private ballot.
Right. I was noticing also they talk about the experience for the non-disabled voter and the disabled voter being the same. And that's true if you use, they have three proposals, the AutoMark voter assisted terminal, the express vote. And if those were the only vote methods you had at your polling sites, vote centers, then that is true. There would be complete anonymity. But they're proposing the 200, DS-200, which is a hand-marked paper ballot that gets scanned. And certainly that leaves room, if that's what you're using, that leaves room for some disparity between the two different types of voting, so that it may be that a disabled voter's ballot could be more readily identified, particularly in elections like we just had, where some of the vote centers had one person show up to vote, or two or three people show up to vote. If one of those is a person with disabilities and they have a different kind of ballot, it's easy to identify that ballot based on where it was cast. And I think that's that's an issue that we need to look at as we look at the accessibility approach here.
That's Harvey.
This is Harvey. Yeah, so Al, that's true not only if the record of the vote is something unique, if you have a case where one voter is appearing at a vote center or one voter on a ballot style at a vote center, that ballot is going to be unique and identifiable. So that actually is it's an inherent problem with the use of vote centers, and particularly with the cases where vote centers might serve somebody from a very remote location where they could actually be unique, or one of two or three. But yeah, it's obviously aggravated by the fact that if the ballot actually appears different physically, even after they're aggregated and sorted and mixed and so forth, you would still be able to find it. That, of course, is an even bigger problem, but that's soluble by making sure that all the representations of the vote look the same. I mean, by ballot style. So I'll give a few comments on the ES&S. So there are a lot of options in the ES&S, but one thing that's interesting is that they claim they do not provide a DRE, direct record electronic. So I was assuming that means that they don't believe that an electronic ballot is being created anywhere, because that's what's kind of unique about a DRE. And they do have accessibility. They have the AutoMark system, which indeed is designed to produce a flat paper ballot. And I guess it resembles the functionality of the Dominion system in some ways, because it actually will read, the AutoMark will read back a paper ballot and speak it to you in audio form. At least I understand it does that. I haven't actually used one or studied one personally, but I've looked at the descriptions of it a lot, and I'm believing this is the same AutoMark or similar, probably just the latest version. The express vote is something that looks a little bit more like a DRE to me. And I don't know what distinguishes it from a DRE, other than it may not actually communicate its cast vote record out of itself electronically. It may only be by paper. But apparently that paper is 4.5 inches wide and variable length, but clearly a different format than a flat paper ballot that the other portions of the ES&S system would provide. There is the... So that's a thermal printer also, it says. So no ink is required. But on the other hand, we're familiar with what thermal printers. Actually, there's a thermal printer on the Dominion, too. I forgot to mention that. But that's for vote results, apparently. It says that all cast vote records, I think it's, are stamped with the same timestamp in order to avoid or to produce anonymity. I'm interested in knowing what the side effect of that is for auditing purposes. I think it's probably okay. That's reasonable. There are 64-bit IDs on the cast vote records, which unclear to me how those relate to IDs on these. I guess they will match to IDs on the scanned images, so they can be related to each other. Not clear, though. Not clear if that's human readable, what or what form that 64-bit ID appears in. Although I believe it also says there is no identifiable, human identifiable mark that could connect a voter to a cast vote record or a ballot. I think that they haven't, maybe haven't thought through how the, or at least they haven't produced this, the procedure or the facility for doing the risk limiting audit, which would require a way to connect the paper ballot to the scanned image to the cast vote record. Or more exactly, you don't actually have to have the scanned image for the for that audit, but it's very, I think it's very useful to have it and useful to use it, and particularly if the public can get access to the cast vote records and the scanned images once they're fully anonymous, so that anybody in the public can actually assist in performing the audit. And that assistance, by the way, comes in the form of producing specific ballots that might not have been interpreted correctly, which could be added to the audit, which would make sure that the audit not only randomly chooses ballots, but also you include in some that are, for some reason, somebody thinks they need to be looked at. And that's one of the dream, the potentials of this next, what's the right word? The next, for, next systems, yeah, the next generation of systems, which we are, you know, in the perfect place to jump to right now. Let's see. It does mention, and I actually asked when I looked at the DS850 scanner, this is the one proposal that we've run across so far that has a unique hardware system for central count. And it's quite a sophisticated scanning system. And no doubt they're very proud of it. And it does actually perform the function of sorting, so it's possible for it to actually outstack, physically outstack paper ballots. And we will run across descriptions in these proposals about how to do resolution, how to sort or outstack virtually or physically the ballots for the purpose of resolution and for auditing, and also perhaps for recounting, where you have a small election inside a huge mass of ballots where you need to get physical access to those ballots again. El Paso County just ran across this issue in the most recent election, where they had an election of about 3,000 ballots among 150,000 that had to be recounted. And so they had to actually physically collect all those ballots out of there. And a vendor came in to help them do that. So they mentioned the potential in their high-speed scanner device to imprint the ballots. And that's something that they actually physically told me about when I saw it. But this proposal reports that they have not done that, but it's a possibility to imprint the ballots with a code that the voter wouldn't have seen that would allow them to connect the paper ballot to the cast vote record and to the scan of the scanned image of the ballot. So that is, I think, there's a potential there for this system to support the risk limiting audit at a single ballot level, but it's not implemented at the moment, is my understanding. One more difference between this and the Dominion. It appears that ES&S is using the more conventional categories of rejection of ballot in the in-person voting situation, where the undervote or overvote can be detected and rejected, but not a full interpretation of the ballot available to the voter to see and to interpret, which would be, that's my third step in the, among knowing that you voted, knowing that your vote is counted, knowing that your vote is counted as you intended, that third part might not be fully true of the ES&S.
Yeah, it wasn't obvious, was it?
It wasn't obvious that you could verify what your ballot looks like in this proposal. When you saw the system in play, did you see that?
No, I didn't see the in-person apparatus for that. I did not see the AutoMark is one of them, mm-hmm. and Express Vote is one of them. And the other one is the DS200, which is the paper scanner. And the believe the paper scanner does not show you an interpretation of your ballot.
Yeah, they came close to
it. DS-200 is in use today, I believe, so that... Yeah. Actually, the DS-850 is in use somewhere also, I think, a couple of places.
Yeah. Thank you for those comments, folks. So let's go ahead and wrap this one up and move on to, I believe, CLEAR is the next one. So we will move on to the CLEAR reading phase and then proceed with discussion for CLEAR.
Harvey, do any of the other proposals refer to something similar to ballot trace? This one mentions that voter trace. Do any of the other proposals bring that subject up, and I just missed it?
Trace, meaning I didn't mean it here, so.
Okay, like living in Denver, we have this opportunity to sign up and trace the ballot all through the phases from the time it's printed to the time it's
right.
All okay. That. And this person did refer to having something called voter trace. And I didn't remember that.
Right. I think ESNS actually goes into that area of interest and
we are officially going to go ahead and start the reading phase of CLEAR Ballot's proposal.
You in fact had that kind of crazy. Three or four. Anyway, the ones we're about to get to after the first five.
Okay.
Right.
Thanks.
Not generally thought of as the fundamental function of the voting tabulation system or capture
sure.
Tabulation.
Okay, folks, time is up. So let's go ahead and open for discussion. Clear ballots proposal. Carol?
Do we have any feedback other than what's written here from either Arapaho or El Paso?
Well, the Arapaho County was risk limiting audit that was done by the state via a grant from the EAC. There are mixed reviews of how successful it was.
Okay. Thank you. That's
mysterious.
It says a lot.
Well, actually, since it was an audit, that doesn't really say much at all, because the there are two different voting systems being used there, right? The Arapaho is on, actually, I haven't seen it, so I don't know which system they are. Sequoia? No. Which one is the Arapaho? You were with the Arapaho, right?
Arapaho is Sequoia.
Sequoia, Dominion, yeah. So the audit would be to compare the results of the rescan. Two scans of the ballots were done there, one by Sequoia and then one later by Clear Ballot using the off-the-shelf scanners. And that was the first time that a risk-limiting audit was attempted at that scale, as far as I understand, anywhere. Or maybe there's a Philip Stark election in California was one of them that they did was that size. But certainly in Colorado, it's by far
the biggest. But they define this as the biggest in history, is what they say in here.
In history, yeah, it might be. So there are quite a few issues that are ongoing. They're controversial with respect to the risk-limiting audit, such as how much paper, physical paper, you have to go look at in order to compare the paper to the cast vote record. And there is so that leads to quite a bit of dissatisfaction, even among experts, about the risk-limiting audit, which might cloud reports coming out of Arapaho. So that's why
And in fairness, the final report has not been written on that Arapaho County experience yet.
Right. And also, as the whole risk-limiting audit pilot has been clouded by this privacy anonymity issue all along. In fact, many counties ended up not doing the pilot at all in the first several years of that project that Al's mentioning. So I wouldn't presume to judge the effectiveness of Clear Ballot as a voting system from experience of this first ever giant risk-limiting audit, which had a lot of other issues involved in it. But what is this? There is something different about Clear Ballot that's worth noting here for sure. And I'd be glad to go into some pieces of it. One of them is that it is a transition kind of product between an audit functionality and a election system, which means it actually can coincide or coexist with an existing election using the existing equipment that we have. And in which case, it would look more like an audit or a pilot of a new system. But it could, in fact, what they did in Arapaho could actually have been a pilot of a voting system. And you could imagine that happening in the 2014 election with all four of our legacy vendors to compare, to A, ascertain the, or compare the results from the Clear Ballot system to the conventional voting system and gain confidence in either one of them, actually, or actually can gain confidence in both, or you end up with individual ballots to look at to figure out why the numbers don't match up. And Clear Ballot's intended to match an election at the smallest granularity that the original voting system provides. And so for me, I mostly understand Clear Ballot as an auditing system, and this is a presentation of Clear Ballot as a transitional to a voting system. And that is a little bit different thing. One of the things that I would notice point out the huge benefit of Clear Ballot first is on page 75, where it shows the matrix of the unusual marks, which Clear Ballot uniquely displays in a matrix so that you can get an idea Yeah, there are little tiny page numbers occasionally in the middle of the pages. It's 75/236, or so somewhere you'll find that page. So where Dominion actually allows the election administrator to set a threshold for the darkness of the mark, actually the pixel count of black in the target, and in the middle of that threshold, it'll reject or outstack the ballot for resolution. In this case, Clear Ballot will locate all of the, as many of the marginal marks based on your own criteria as you like, display them in a matrix like this. And then you can see where the dividing line is between what it interprets as a vote and what it interprets not as a vote, and you can go examine each of the ballot images underneath each of those marks and decide whether it belongs in that category or not. So this is a way of getting around. I mean, the great benefit of having the paper ballot is that we allow our less able voters to actually vote on paper in whatever manner they can manage to vote, and they don't necessarily make a perfect mark. And so here is a way where we have a machine-assisted method of resolving the unusual marks, all of them, not just by looking at what's called undervote or overvote, but all of the unusual marks. So this is a unique opportunity, and I believe this is the wave of the future here. And what Clear Ballot's done is concentrated on that tabulation aspect rather than on ballot production or the EMS aspect, the election management system. So for example, Clear Ballot's proposal here will not provide an air gap between the interpretation tabulation process and, I shouldn't say tabulation, the interpretation part of central count from aggregation tabulation reporting. And they say right in here, as soon as you tabulate the last ballot in that batch, it shows up in the database as part of the count. So, and you'll see these other manufacturers have been accustomed to providing equipment into the environment where the EMS, and particularly in Colorado, the EMS needs not to know what the results of the election are until 7 p.m. on election night. And yet Colorado habitually tabulates ballots starting as much as 2 weeks ahead. And so we do not want actually to have the EMS present those election results right away once they're being tabulated. Although I would point out that I think the speed with which the Clear Ballot system functions may actually be a lot faster than some of the proprietary scanners, and so we may not need to tabulate ballots before election day using Clear Ballot's functionality. But I don't know that for sure, but it's my general understanding that might be true. The
4,500 ballots an hour is not real fast compared to some of the central counts that are out there, do 300 a minute, ESNS, for example.
Okay, is that the fastest of the Fujitsu scanners? There's three, so they actually are offering three different levels of a scanner, which is a little unusual here. I guess the heart system will, most likely, I didn't read it in there, but I'm sure the heart system allows you to function on with a variety of different cost level of scanners. Right. Likewise, the Clear Ballot has a very reasonable solution for small counties. The and Clear Ballot has definitely focused on the audit. Obviously, they originally designed their system with audit in mind. This is the system that actually does, as it's processing the ballots, it actually provides a label for each box to identify which ballots are in that box to allow for easy access to the paper ballots later. In fact, you could click on one of those poorly marked marks in that matrix there, and it would show you the full ballot image and tell you which box and which ballot, how many to count down to get to that specific ballot in that box. So that's what you need in order to be able to do the single ballot audit, the risk limiting audit.
This is Patrick. I have one observation. If we were to choose this solution, would it comply with the Secretary's vision of a universal voting system?
Yeah, well, I could answer that. Al could probably answer that too. So my understanding of the vision is, and the reason why we have these diverse proposals is because of the componentization of the voting system. And we already have several components that aren't the same manufacturer, such as everyone counts and run back and so forth, already in place. So my understanding is that it is quite possible for the ballot production to be done, ballot design to be done by existing systems. That's what actually Clear Ballot's proposing right now.
Yeah, they're proposing eventually to bring their own ballot creation
apparently
process into it, I think.
But they didn't outline that in here. I didn't see that. I didn't see their ballot production.
I don't think they talked about it much, except to say that it would be online by 2014 or 2016, something like that.
It was something along that line. It basically said, yeah, we're kind of working on it, but it doesn't.
But they're not there yet. That's producing
correct.
It.
They're not claiming to be there yet.
So what they have is actually a piece that's between ballot production and EMS, actually, right now.
Right.
Or they may say they have the EMS, but at least it's missing that one piece that I just mentioned, the air gap. And so they are clearly a component that has the possibility of gradually, instead of suddenly, replacing the existing voting systems, which I think it's arguable that has some real advantage for the counties in terms of trust. You know, they can actually transition into a new system without just throwing away the old and going with all new, actually transition a portion to the new one. They have the old still running in place.
Do we know that from any of the discussions we've heard from the other committee where there are actual county clerks present, do they like this solution, this stutter step solution? Do we know? Anybody?
That committee has not reviewed this proposal yet.
Oh, they haven't.
They've
okay.
only reviewed two.
Yeah, we know they're
meeting Thursday if you'd like to listen in.
Okay.
Their legislative committee is talking about trying to run a legislation for a pilot of potentially several million dollars. So it may be that they should consider the potential advantage of this system in that pilot environment, particularly because I think Clear Ballot actually designed itself for this particular case. I mean, they've gone to all the work to support the existing legacy systems in Colorado.
Evelyn?
I had a discussion with my county clerk and the person who's the supervisor of elections in Moffat County, and they both said that one of the things that they were really upset about was that they were going to have to dispose of or warehouse thousands of dollars of perfectly good voting machines that had worked well for them. And I think this system comes the closest to letting them feel like they might go on using the voting machines that they like and gradually convert by module to something that is more modern and that isn't going to break the bank right away.
So in fairness, it seems to me that of the systems that are out there, there are systems to design ballots, EMS systems, and then the actual vote capture systems. And this would replace the vote capture systems, but not in-person. They do not have the in-person voting solution or ADA-compliant solution. So that has to come from another vendor, for sure. Also, I guess it's worth pointing out that this is the closest to open-source software and all commercial off-the-shelf hardware.
Are you concerned about the web base of this, since they quite clearly make it obvious that this is all web-based and therefore
we're
concerned about that?
Not the voter interface, though.
No, not the voter interface, no.
Right. So that doesn't have to mean the wide area web. It can be entirely on an isolated system.
All right.
But yes, the software is based.
They just haven't developed it yet.
Well, I guess that's true. I am a little bit concerned. This is described itself as a pre-revenue company, which seems like the possibility of
intermortality
may be there. So I think we need to be concerned a little bit about that.
It's a pre-revenue company, but they've been around for quite a while developing this product and moving it into different states for years in Florida, actually, with Ion Sancho and the Diebold AccuVote system down there.
Okay, folks, thank you so much. Let's move on to... Okay, how about we take About, is it 5 minutes sufficient? Okay, let's take a 5 minute break while the new proposals for our review arrive. And we will actually end up proceeding to Rhinebeck Election Services. That'll be the next one.
Where is it?
Has anybody joined us since we started this process over the phone? Okay.
Did anyone stay with us through lunch?
Is anybody going to order more cookies? That's the real relevant question.
folks on this one, since this is just a specific proposal for envelope and signature processing, we will do 10 minutes. So we are, yes, we are officially going into reading phase for Rhinebeck Election Services. Okay, folks, that concludes our reading time for the Rhinebeck Election Services proposal on ballot processing. So let's go ahead and open it up for discussion. Where's your list?
Ms. Patrick Davis, I like that they work with big jurisdictions in Colorado already.
Did want to mention Rhinebeck is the current provider of our ballot on demand with a grant from EAC. The state bought one ballot on demand unit for every county, and other counties are now buying those on their own too. It's a different thing than this, but Rhinebeck is a familiar product.
Yes, Carol.
I don't understand it well enough to know. Does this also process paper ballots, or is it just mail ballots?
This is essentially just the envelopes.
That's what I was thinking.
Just the envelopes.
So that's not all of our ballots.
The ballots are in the envelopes.
Well, it's only for the mail ballots. It's
yeah.
Not for ballots.
80% of the ballots.
No, that's where I'm coming from. It doesn't serve everything.
Is this Agilis system in use in Colorado, actually?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
I noted, this is Harvey, I noted that there are a number of areas here where there's response code 1 and no response, particularly in related to signature verification automated signature verification software. And I'm curious what that means, actually. I suppose it means that one should mean they're complying or they're planning to comply, but no comment. So does the Agilis system that's in use today use automatic signature verification?
Yes.
It does.
Okay. Evelyn.
And this would certainly make my county clerk feel a little better that she wouldn't have to throw out quite all of her voting machines.
And Evelyn, my guess is your clerk does not have the benefit of one of these wonderful machines yet.
She may not. I don't know that. But
so far, these are the province of large counties where they are trying to handle huge numbers of incoming mail ballots.
And my guess is that it will remain that province, medium to large counties would be the ones interested in this system. This wouldn't be a system that would be of any value to a county that has 2,000 registered voters.
That's Adams.
One of the actual advantages of having this sorting system, which I believe is being used in Boulder, I mean, not this manufacturer, but the generic concept of doing the mail ballot sorting, is to sort the ballots as opposed to the envelopes, but the ballots inside the envelopes by ballot style, which actually allows them to be batched by ballot style and thus become even more anonymous, because in any given batch there's no way of selecting one ballot out of it because they're all the same ballot style. And I want to mention that that's one huge advantage of having the ballot sorting capability. That's not necessarily obvious. I don't even know if it's even mentioned in all these proposals here. But
I'm not sure. And they, I forget which system Boulder has. If it's the
Bell and Howell.
Bell and Howell. Yeah. These kinds of systems, they replace the date stamp provision. They can open the envelope. Some of them, they can sort the envelope to various by precinct or ballot style, whatever it is. They can capture the signature if you don't want them to do automatic verification. There are systems in Colorado now that can do automatic signature verification that are not used that way, but they capture the signature and put it into the computer system so it can be compared with the score signatures without having to actually physically handle the ballots in trays. So there's a lot of capabilities in these systems, and I think they're very important capabilities for medium to large size counties, and I think there'll be a lot of interest in them. And we have three good proposals.
And this is Harvey. The downside, actually, of it, just to balance that out, which I'm sure the small counties will all appreciate, is that the physically handling the envelope actually provides extra verification capability, because instead of looking at a scanned image of a signature, you're actually looking at ink on paper. And so I believe there's some advantage to actually physically handling the envelope, just FYI. But clearly when you have 150,000 envelopes to deal with, it's tough to see handling them all individually by hand.
And you can always go find that envelope if you need to.
If you can detect what you need to detect from the electronic system, or I guess there's three different sort of levels of this kind of service of signature discrepancy checking. One is physically holding the envelope. One is seeing it on a screen projected next to a score instance of a signature. And the third one is the automatic system that only gives you the ones it thinks are discrepant. And then staff or election judges look at and decide what happens to the ballot, get counted or become a signature cure, opportunity for signature cure.
Any further comments? If not, let's move along to
Clarissa.
Evelyn, sorry.
That's okay. Is it in Colorado's best interest to recommend then two different voting systems, since this Rumbeck one in particular is more usable for large to medium-sized counties? Wouldn't we also have to review something that would be beneficial to small counties?
So this is Harvey. Well, Rumbeck appears to have two different levels of their option.
They claim they have a smaller one.
Yeah, it seems it's half the speed of the bigger one, so it can't be that small. But there are three different proposals for ballot sorting, and what you just gave a generic description that mixes them all together, and they may not actually all do exactly what you just said. So we actually need to, for our purposes of doing this evaluation, we have to actually bear down and figure out which ones do which things.
Right, and in direct response to Evelyn's question, I think small counties will not be interested in purchasing these, and this is not a voting system. This is a ballot envelope processing system, and I doubt that very many small counties would be interested in going to this level of expense because they just don't have the volume to justify it.
But we have seen small counties buy some very fancy gear, actually, so it's always possible.
Okay, on to the Pitney Bowes envelope signature processing and ballot tracking proposal.
Thank you.
This one has no tabs.
Okay, folks.
I don't like this one. There are no tabs.
We are getting ready to start. 10-minute review of the Pitney Bowes proposal.
By the way, you will see many pages in here that are marked confidential, do not copy. We, when they submitted this, we told them that that was not acceptable. And so we have a letter from them agreeing to allow this to be public information. There was some other financial information that we did remove.
Al, is there a chance I will get a chance to see a printout of the email I sent this morning that has the UVS Advisory Committee criteria plus my additional criteria? No, that is...
That's the original.
That's the original one, but not my version of it.
Oh, not with yours, no.
Right. Thanks. The other one is a evaluation form, number 6, I think.
Five.
That's it. Starts out with what Al said out as to the didn't find out what second chance voting was. Did you find out what that is? Second chance voting?
Second chance.
Okay, folks, time is up on our review for the Pitney Bowes system, and let's go ahead and open it up for discussion. Anybody have any general comments other than I will throw out there that obviously Pitney Bowes is being very specific in addressing that they acknowledge that small counties may not necessarily be able to fully use their system since they are small counties, but they could potentially consider one of their alternatives. And they do emphasize that they've been in the business of handling ballot processing and mail processing for decades, and as such, their product validity and accuracy of delivery of services pretty much speaks for itself. And I think they put it pretty simple and straight to the point proposal, albeit the missing tabs. I do agree, Carol. It's easier to read when it's separated and orderly. But it's fairly straight and to the point. So those are my general comments.
Are you saying this is a simple? It seems to be a very sophisticated proposal to me, and probably kind of thicker than the other one and complicated. But I'm not saying it's bad. But
well, I mean, when you're going through the stuff, I mean, other than skipping some specifics about metrics and things like that, they really did do a good job of presenting it to, you know, readability purposes. You know what I mean? I don't know if that makes sense, but I mean, it was easily readable through the RFP, looking at the references, looking at, you know, highlighting specific examples, what their two different types of machines do and what they handle. And so the technical aspects were actually, and I'm not going to say that they were dumbed down, but they were manageable.
I see.
That's what I'm trying to qualify as simplistic.
I think the most exciting thing about their proposal is the ability to remove the tab over the signature. That I think a lot of counties would really like that, because there's an enormous amount of worker hours invested in pulling those tabs off. Provides a lot of jobs for judges, but it's very time-consuming and it's a bottleneck.
This does selective opening also, apparently. So that is slitting the envelope open.
Some kind of an opening feature. One of the questions I had is on specifications. I noticed, and this is, you know, kind of maybe simplistic, the Runbeck system would take an envelope up a half an inch thick, this one only to 0.375 inches thick. Given the length of the Colorado ballot, do we care? And, you know, that extra small margin is a number of pages as far as paper goes, and I don't know whether we care about that particular specification or not, but this one would be a thinner packet that it could take.
I think that's an important distinction to make.
Oh, it's in the system specifications. In the Runbeck one, there was a one-pager system specifications page.
Yeah, that's. I was going to say that's a very interesting comment, Rick, because it. Yeah. I know that based on the ballot design, some ballots tend to be thicker than others.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're folding something, how the thickness does actually play into effect.
Yeah, now they'll both take the 8.5 by 11 size envelopes. That's no problem. So I'm just looking at thickness. See if I can find where that was.
Oh, I don't know that I've ever seen one that was a half inch thick, even multiple pages. But
list your collections every now.
Harvey, Evelyn, or Carol, have you any comments?
I think it's worth investigating, but I haven't actually seen in these two proposals we've looked at yet what the interface to SCORE looks like and how we can be sure that the information that actually gets loaded into SCORE is accurate and it's overseen by human beings, is actually what I really mean. So there really needs to be some kind of a oversight mechanism, because this, otherwise making a totally automated system all the way into SCORE might be what is somebody's proposing here, but I would be cautious about that anyway. But I haven't read long enough to feel, I hope that there's descriptions of those in these proposals, but I haven't seen yet in the 10 minutes allowed for reading them.
Yeah, Al, that thickness specification's on page 32 of the Pitney Post proposal.
I also think in this evaluation, we should consider the possibility of wrong county envelopes showing up, because I know that's actually happening, because I've seen envelopes that went through the Boulder ballot sorting system, got time stamped, and they showed up in Broomfield a couple of days after Election Day and didn't get counted. So, and they ran through the Pitney Bowes in Boulder on the 2nd of November, so there were like 3 days for them to get over to Broomfield and didn't. So one of the advantages of having one of these sorting systems would be to be able to get those ballots delivered to where they need to be. And I'm just throwing it out there, even though it's not really a piece of the evaluation of the system per se, but the system ought to be able to do something smart with the wrong envelope.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And particularly in the metro area, all the counties get other county ballots, and we have had a process for doing the swaps, and as we get closer to Election Day, we actually meet up and swap ballots with the four counties around here. But in the early stages, we stick them in an envelope and mail them. But we timestamp them in so that the county knows when they were received by an election official in the state.
Right.
And just to address Harvey's comment, I think that it is important for us to be able to count whether, I mean, part of the quality control aspect of any of these systems is if they're able to detect or sort properly where the destination of a ballot is to make sure that those ballots are counted, regardless of what the county of record is. I mean, so if you're saying that Boulder receives it, but it's supposed to go to Broomfield, voter, in essence, has been disenfranchised if that ballot wasn't counted. So it's definitely an aspect that needs to be evaluated.
Yep, that's actually happening, so I'm not mentioning it by imagination. I saw that happen. Another thing that this type of system can help do is to provide auditing of the actual sending of the signature cure letters out to make sure they actually go out. It's quite, I mean, data from the fact that of the arrival of the envelope and the fact that it was sorted for signature discrepancy, and there would be a time and date in which that happened. You could actually go back and audit to see whether those letters, in fact, somebody should be able to make a report that says, here are the ones that you haven't actually sent yet, you know, better send them out. Because that is the scary part about the mail ballot, beside the ballot not actually arriving at the clerk's office, is the possibility that your signature will be seen as discrepant and you will not see the letter in time to respond to it. And so it's key that it's really crucial, actually, that all those letters go out on time and those voters get an opportunity to cure their signatures. And by the way, these high-speed systems obviously allow that to happen faster, right? That so.
Any further comments?
Yeah, I haven't heard any comments yet on the automated signature verification aspect. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Well, I thought the request for proposal actually went reasonably deep on the issue of how to test and what the criteria are for the automatic signature verification. That's very important, and you know, we need to look at that carefully. I haven't actually looked at that particular question, and the answer to that question on each of these proposals is going to be very interesting, and I would hope to do that for the next go round.
Okay, folks, we are moving on now to Bell and Howell's envelope and signature processing proposal. Okay, this will mark the beginning of our review phase for the Bell and Howell proposal. Okay, folks, let's go ahead and start discussing the Bell Howell system. Harvey, Carol, Rick, Evelyn.
So not surprisingly, this is the system that does talk about ballot anonymity. Right. And that's because the Boulder County Clerk has been working to achieve ballot anonymity, and the Bell and Howell system is there. So there's a half a page or so here about why it's a good idea. And actually, they mentioned something quite important, which is the need to hold back ballots of a given ballot style. I mean, that's actually how this process has to work. You have to decide what number of ballots in a batch is an adequate number to protect the anonymity. And that actually it's the same kind of solution we need for vote centers, where you actually would like to stop people from voting until there are five people from that ballot style to vote, and then let them vote. Sort of, I'm not actually suggesting that as that would be a practical solution to the anonymity problem, but it's not a very friendly one. But the same thing happens with paper ballot envelopes coming in. So you basically make them wait. Don't go through the system until there's 5 or 10 or 50 or whatever the threshold number is. And that has been described in this document, I'm glad to say. So Bell and Howell is definitely on top of that issue. And while this isn't the fancy proposal with the patents in the back and all that of the previous one we just looked at, this is a very sophisticated proposal. So it has two levels of performance plus one that they are not finished with, I gather. That's a 5,000 to 7,000 piece per hour that they're proposing for smaller counties. I don't know how it'd be interesting to see which sizes of Colorado counties actually are thinking of buying sorting equipment for ballots, as opposed to having their election judges look through the ballots, which is, as I said, you know, that still has some real big integrity benefits to have actually hands and eyes on the actual envelopes.
Well, we have some counties in Colorado that have the capability already of automated signature verification, but choose not to use it.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that could be a wise choice also. Yeah.
This one also proposed ballot tracking, and the whole issue of IMBs is a large issue across the state because of the way SCORE operates. So that's an issue that's needs to be addressed on a number of levels, but intelligent mail barcodes is going to be a key part of any solution that is proposed to track mail ballots, and we're not quite there yet. But it is an identified issue that's being addressed. I'm not sure what the timeline is on it.
So those are just to track the ones that are in the U.S. Postal Service?
Yes. Uh-huh. That's all they're proposing here, I think, is to use the USPS tracking system and interface that with SCORE to be able to provide the voter that opportunity. Now, I think if I understand the way Denver described theirs, I think it tracks it even through the processes within the county once it's back from the post office.
That's what one would hope would be possible, particularly to know that the signature cure process has been activated. That's something that's most crucial for a voter to be able to find out online.
It's been accepted, that their ballot has been accepted.
And Boulder, I think, is maybe unique. I think I haven't heard of another county that actually provides that information, but I did hear a rumor the Secretary of State's planning to enable some opportunity to get that info. But I don't know what stage that's in, but I don't think it's happening now. But I think Boulder does have the opportunity to find out your ballot's been accepted, which means it's not going through the signature cure process. once you're in the cure process, then you actually want to know whether it's being counted or not. And that's a, you know, a third place where the information falls through.
Carol?
I was intrigued by the training. They said they do 3 or 4 days on site, and then they do it again at the time of the election. Doesn't say whether it's just before, but I got the sense it was during the election. They have sort of a training to see if there were things that weren't working quite right. Good follow through.
Harvey?
I guess I would be remiss to mention that the Bell and Howell experience in the 2012 election in Boulder was much publicized by watchers who observed the machine being stopped and technicians advancing on the machine and working on it extensively as the in the middle of the election processing. And also there were a lot of objections to the rate at which the ballots were appearing on screens, including 4, I think, at a time. And there were people reporting the amount of times those 4 ballots were on the screen was on the order of a second or less, and seemingly insufficient to do a good verification. So I'm just throwing that out as a it's information that's out there that I know from other people in the public who worked on that election. And they were very concerned about the lack of sufficient testing before the election, and the I think there was actually a HAVA complaint on this. Is that right? I'm not actually sure. But I know there's been a quite a bit of follow-up with the Secretary of State's office afterwards, and hopefully this UVS project will actually put in place a serious test scenario and quality assurance plan for these envelope sorters, because they are, when they're being used as part of the signature verification process, they are the only line of defense against fraudulent voting and the only assurance that we have eligible voters voting. So replacing the face-to-face confrontation of the voter with the election judge in the polling place. So it's a really important interface for the voter, even though the voter is not present. And that's why we have to be particularly careful in choosing these systems, and most particularly the ways in which they are being used. So we're making sure they're being used in a good way that's beneficial to the election.
Yeah, and it's my understanding that the underlying signature verification program or software, the process, is the same in all 3 of the vendors that we've seen that have automated signature verification.
The hardware, the actual vendor of the
Hardware is different, but I understand, and I may have this wrong, but I understand that they're all using the same underlying software for the signature verification.
I forget what the name of it is. Is that right? Paracomp, I read in one of these. That would be surprising if they're all using the same one. Yeah.
I don't know if this
I'll investigate
picks
that further.
Up on what you were just saying, but I did write down that it's the only vendor that develops its own hardware and sells directly from the factory to the customer. I don't know where I saw that, but
I saw that.
I did see it.
Yeah, so that's sort of synonymous or similar to what ES&S does with their high-speed scanner. They're building this thing to their own spec, as opposed to buying a commercial sorting device, which obviously Runbeck does, and I assume then Pitney Bowes. I don't know.
I was just kind of
Harvey and Madam Chair. This is George. I just want to interject on that because I was involved in some of that process in Boulder. I think you're referring, Harvey, to the 2012 election.
Yes, I was. Thank you.
Yeah. I may be incorrect, but I believe on the issue of how many signatures came up on a screen at a certain time. That might have been something that could be customized, and it was the decision of the clerk's office to run them in with multiple ones on the screen at the same time. I'm not certain on that, but I do know that it was up to the operator to decide how quickly they would approve the signatures that came up. But it was the case that I believe there were 4 pairs of signatures that would come up at any given time. and then people were clicking through as they would approve them. These are the election judges. But that, yes, there was a HAVA complaint about the breakdowns in the system. I believe it had just been installed, and so there were a number of breakdowns that occurred, and the Bell and Howell people were on site trying to get those things repaired as the election was ongoing.
Right. Thanks, George. That's helpful. Yes, we shouldn't be implying that some of those characteristics were actually the result of Bell and Howell specifically. They may, in fact, be just the way that the election judges were using the score system. I don't even know.
Right. And perhaps some of the breakdowns have been fixed in the meantime. That would probably be information that you could get from the clerk's office as to whether or not they've been satisfied with the repairs that were made subsequently.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to, these systems in Colorado, there are not very many of them, and they are not very often used as far as I know. So we probably haven't developed a lot of experience actually using these systems. Maybe the run back is longer in the state. I don't know. But it's worth trying to make sure that the selection process works based on actual experience with these systems, since I think they're all in use, right? Maybe Al would know that. Well, they've all been in use at least in one election. The envelope sorting systems have been in use in at least one election in Colorado? Yeah. Okay, he says yes.
As far as I know, I think they have.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, George, for chiming in. We were wondering if you were still alive. Just kidding.
Or awake.
Okay, folks. So let's move on to the I-3 ballot, which is specific to ballot tracking.
And this is the system that's in place in Denver. Yeah.
Oh. It's interesting. They use the same reference. Mm-hmm. The fellow who was under Amber, or under, or was in Denver and is now in Denver.
Okay, let's go ahead and start. And Harvey, it seems like you're right off the gate right now.
Yeah. So yeah, this the opportunities for voters to learn about the status of their ballot is high on my list of priorities. Being on the public participation panel seems like a good place to be worried about that. So this service is pretty sophisticated, but it actually only provides data about some data from the U.S. Postal Service about the fact that the ballot is on the way to the voter, that the ballot's on the way back, and then it has four possible options after that, which seem to me to be rather sparse. And those four options are accepted, rejected, undeliverable, or accepted, received in person. So it seems to me that if the voter's going to get real benefit out of this system, they'd be happy to know their vote's been accepted, if in fact in score by accepted it means that the vote is going to be counted. Now, from what I've seen in Bloomfield recently, that wouldn't necessarily be the case, because election judges might actually move the ballot from the accepted flag to the rejected flag at some point after a staff person had put it in the accepted flag. So what I'm saying is score may actually be predicting what is going to happen to the ballot status rather than actually responding to it. And so if you were just to feed that data out from score out to the voter, they might be very much misled. Also, the fact is that if you're not accepted and actually being counted, your ballot may be in a number of different phases. And thanks to the 1303 bill, there are actually some additional phases that it might be in. And this I've also learned from watching at Broomfield. So your ballot might be, if it hasn't been accepted, it might be waiting to be seen by election judges. It might have been seen and been refused temporarily for the purpose of a signature cure. And then there would be the point at which the letter had actually been sent to you, which actually I would think that would be in here as one of the possible one of the things that the voter would find out. And then when you send your letter back with the affidavit that says I returned my voted ballot, which is what that affidavit says, and then when that affidavit actually arrived at the election office, and when it actually final adjudication of your signature discrepancy had been done, and then your vote is actually, then your ballot's scheduled for counting, still not actually counted. Maybe it's asking too much to know that the ballot actually has been counted by the tabulator. I think that's too much to know because the identity's been separated at that point. So all we can do is actually learn about what happens to the envelope. But those are all important phases of that a voter really deserves to know about. And I'm suspecting that SCORE doesn't provide that information to this company, otherwise they would have put it in this proposal. Would I be correct about that? Yeah. So this seems like an area where SCORE might be seen as deficient. I would imagine that somebody could nudge somebody to work on trying to improve SCORE so that it actually knows about these things, but also the counties need to actually use SCORE in a manner that means that these flags actually are meaningful to the voter, because I know now that that's not happening necessarily, that SCORE is not necessarily responding to the status of the ballot. It might be actually predicting where a ballot's going to go and not where it's actually been. Or, I'm sorry, I'm actually talking about the envelopes. Those are all envelopes with ballots sealed inside is what they are. Now, the second part about the 1303 is the fact that there were counties sending out requests for voters to affirm their eligibility. And that's a whole other aspect that might lead to your vote not being counted and even selectively being counted for certain contests and not others. And so that fact would all be hidden by this also. So that's why I said I have real comments here, because this proposal as it stands right here doesn't seem really very adequate to deal with this problem. It may be, actually, I wonder whether there are other pieces of other proposals that have this similar service in them. I think there are. Right? I think there are.
I don't think any of them go as far as this one. And I think that what you're describing probably doesn't exist.
Right, as close as it does exist might be Boulder's own county system. I understand, but I have never experienced it. Yeah. Anyway, there might not be competition for this particular aspect, but in any case, the people who are out there working on this system should be aware that all those needs are out there.
Any other comments on I-3? Carol.
Well, I do appreciate the comments and the questions that Harvey has brought up. I've just been a user of it since it started. And it's really
of the Denver, really the Denver system? This is the Denver system we're describing
Denver
here.
System, okay. Right. I live in Denver. Okay. And you signed up for it immediately. And I found it just great. Now, you know, I don't need curing and I don't need some of this other stuff, so I'm straightforward, shall we say, and it's been really reassuring to get something that says it's here, it's there, look for it when it's been mailed, and then ultimately we have it and it's been accepted.
Right, I would agree. This satisfies
the
conventional
norm.
Yes, the norm, right, yeah. Exactly.
Right, and some information is better than no information.
Yeah.
Yes, I won't disagree with that. In fact, some information in Denver is a lot better for Denver voters than the rest of the state who don't get this information. They get from Go Vote Colorado the fact that their ballot has arrived has been binked in, as the election officials say, as their envelope has arrived, but no idea what's going to happen to it next.
Any further comments on I-3 ballots? Okay, seeing none, then let's go ahead and move along to Five Cedars Group accessible balloting.
Thank you. Is this one readable? This better be readable.
No, it
isn't.
Don't
tell me it's not readable.
No, it isn't. No, there are four of these or five that were not sent to Allen.
All right. To the Five Cedars Group, Evelyn Tileston here says that the proposal is not readable by a reading machine.
Right. In the form it was sent.
In the form it was sent, yes. In fact, Evelyn wants to request that the companies out there actually provide her with a
accessible
machine reader,
I wish they would.
Accessible version of the proposals.
My only choice then is either to pay someone to read all this valuable information to me, or to print it all off and read it myself with my. I do have a scanner that will read print, but I don't want to do either one of those things.
I will work on the school and see if we can do it.
Yeah, it was hard and. Five Cedars and I-3 and ESS and Bell and Howell, those five were not in a form that I could read. I did. At the time that I sent that, I hadn't looked at all 10 of them. So those five were not, and I know they had to be accessible somewhere. Somebody wrote them in Word or something.
Okay, so that was
Hart and ESS, Five Cedars, I-3, and Bell and Howell. So I'm reading Harvey's information instead.
Okay, folks. So let's open this up for discussion regarding five-seaters. I was thinking of the AFB. I was reading alternative format ballot. So let's go ahead and talk about this. And I think my first question goes directly to Evelyn, because Al and I were talking about how this is obviously a unique ballot design, but it's so unique that would it potentially bring up the question that as an accessible voter, would you, or is there a possibility that because it's so unique that you would give up your anonymity in order for that ballot to be translated into something that is standardized within a system that we currently use?
That might happen if the voting machine that is in Moffitt County, the accessible machine, which is a heart machine of some things, if that machine couldn't be programmed to accept this or interface with whatever the system is, then either the county's got to buy a whole new, $500,000 machine.
Does anyone have additional comments?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I did not hear almost any part of that. It was breaking up at the beginning.
Didn't turn on Evelyn's mic until just now.
Oh, I'm sorry. What I said was that because it is unique, that any accessible voting machine in the state that is accessible for blind and visually impaired persons would have to be somehow reprogrammed to interpret this particular ballot style. And I would imagine there'd be quite an expense in doing that, unless the company came up with some solution on its own to include that as part of what their system would do.
So this is Harvey. I'm pretty sure that the idea of five-seaters is to allow you to vote on your own computer and not to use the accessible device down at the county. And this is not intended specifically for use in a polling center, or it could be, I guess, right? And perhaps that's the way Colorado would use it, since we don't have voting at home in Colorado in our law. That is to say, I didn't put that quite right. I mean, we do mail ballot voting at home, but we don't do some other alternate form voting at home at the moment.
Yeah, and this was designed in Oregon, which is an all mail ballot state, so it was designed to accommodate that.
Right. They never had in a plan to put them into polling centers because they don't have them, right? But we could or would, I suppose, do that. And so this ballot, the issue is whether this ballot gets duplicated onto a standard shape size ballot when it goes in with all the other votes to be tabulated, and that would be by duplication, presumably.
What is the reason for having a unique ballot style?
Evelyn, I think that my question general was that because it was designed for Oregon, as Harvey just pointed out and put it into better words than I did, that it would have to be duplicated if it were to be somebody, not necessarily because our law doesn't accommodate, otherwise you'd have to go to a vote center. So if you have this type of balloting at home, then you'd have to get it duplicated somewhere in order for the ballot to get tabulated properly, unless we modify the law to make sure that it addresses this type of an alternate format balloting in Colorado so that it adjusts to the law. Because as 1303 addresses, we still have vote centers. And there might be people that don't want to vote by mail. So in the event of that, you know, how do we adjust to be able to accommodate this type of a ballot to make sure that voters' anonymity is protected?
Okay.
Right, so the desirable solution is that this, well, first of all, once we, since right now we do not have a uniform system, we actually have got ballots of different types, and so each county has its own problem doing an alternative form of ballot that actually is anonymous with all the rest. Once we have a uniform system, then all the counties can produce their alternate form ballot the same way, and they can all be anonymous with all the rest. But this is not, unless this is the ballot style that gets chosen by Colorado for all the ballots in Colorado, then this is not the one which becomes anonymous with all the rest, and therefore has to be duplicated. And since the conceivably five-seaters could be, you know, delivering us a ballot production function for all of the ballots in Colorado, that could be, I don't think this proposal says that, but it could possibly say that. And then the other, the vendor that does the tabulation would actually have to conform to this ballot, which I suspect then, you know, clear ballot is the type that actually just takes the PDF of the blank ballot and turns that into the code for reading the, and understanding the ballot. So they probably could work with this company as the ballot vendor, ballot design vendor, and actually tabulate. But then the other companies have their own proprietary ballot design, so they wouldn't be using this one, and this would, the content of this ballot would have to be duplicated onto the ballot of the other vendor in order to be anonymous and to be tabulated as all the other ballots are tabulated.
Carol? Rick?
Well, I may be oversimplifying it, but this largely looks like a program for making the ballot bigger. Just plain increasing the font size. I mean, there is a section in here on audio ballots, but it doesn't seem like it's much explanation of audio ballots at all. It's on page 40. And, you know, unless there's something more here, this really doesn't look like it's particularly helpful unless I'm just missing something here, which I could be.
Yes, Carol.
Likewise, this is all new to me, so I tried to get as much in 10 minutes as I could. But this, to me, doesn't reach all disabled. I mean, I think basically this is aiming at the blind.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And this is accessible voting on COTS hardware, I believe. That's what's a bit unusual about it. I don't know if we have another proposal that's accessible voting on COTS hardware.
I think you're right. I mean, this is allowing you, allowing a voter to vote at home if they have some visual acuity. They can enlarge the font on their computers. It seems that eventually you have to get to a paper ballot that can be tabulated.
Right.
And I haven't had the opportunity to read this entire proposal yet.
Right. So the Everyone Counts also has a interface that runs on a COTS hardware. I guess I missed that one. So that is a voting opportunity on COTS hardware, which does actually have a means to produce a, which we didn't look carefully enough at that proposal, but at least I can see a route for that turning into a conventional ballot to be tabulated.
Their schematic that shows the process winds up with ballot summary pages are returned to county offices. Which then would be where they got duplicated onto an actual ballot that could be tabulated. But we'll all have a chance to read this more thoroughly before the next time around.
Does anybody have any further comments on this one? No? Here's where we are, folks. We have done our very best to jump into every single proposal with a very broad approach, and obviously it is now our task to go in there and review them at greater detail to be able to come back at our meeting on January 7th and comb through the details that are pertinent to this evaluative process. So I think that all I can task everyone with is our due diligence to read through every single one of these reports, small and large, to make sure that on January 7th we're prepared to just disseminate the information properly, to make sure that we pick the key components that we think address what has been tasked not only of our committee, but this whole process in its entirety. So, Al, what do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I think that's exactly what has to happen. I would propose that the issues that Harvey identified as important to evaluate be a topic for an email discussion over the next few days so that we either confirm them or change them or whatever we want to do so that we come up with a set of values that we're considering as we read through these. Otherwise, there's no point in reading through it unless you know what it is you're trying to get out of it. So I don't know that we have the brain power left to do that this afternoon after all this reading.
I'm thinking of making a quick pitch, just an introduction to what's here.
Okay, briefly.
Yeah. Accuracy is in here. Like number three, notice accuracy for perfectly marked ballots. So that's something we actually, it's kind of a no-brainer, but it's something to be thinking about. Then there's accuracy of the non-perfectly marked ballots, which basically means are all those ballots going to get in front of a human being to resolve what the voter intent is, either the voter or election judges. So that's all about accuracy. I've got a little piece about reliability here. I've got pieces here about confirming anonymity and the voter being able to confirm that their vote was counted as intended, and the ability to retrieve the paper ballot efficiently for resolution. We've been talking about that a little bit. And so a lot of this is about auditing, about oversight, opportunities for oversight, a lot of issues that the public will care about that the election officials might not care so much about, which I believe I have a responsibility to bring up those issues. Because the other committee won't, I believe. So, and I believe we have constituents out there who may not know that they will benefit from these qualities here, but they will actually benefit from them sooner or later. So that's my, number two is actually an all-paper system as intended by the 2009 legislation. Like there was a legislative intent.
Which expires created, in 2014.
Which expires. He says, gleefully smiling over there. That was the culmination of the Conroy v. Dennis case, which was about the lack of testing of DREs. And in fact, the 2007 recertification process actually led to lots of failures in the tests, and substantial compliance was used as an excuse to continue using our existing systems. But here we are in our grand opportunity to start over on that and do it right this time. And that's why I have put these additional 24 items on here, which I believe are all recognizable. And some of them are clarifications of the advisory committee ones to make it more clear how you would actually do it or what you look for. So, and I don't disagree with the ones from the advisory committee, by the way. But they're largely administrative, and the ones I put are more functional about the voting system, the way it actually functions. So I commend them to you for your homework, your perusal.
Yeah, well, let's try to get this wrapped up this week. What you think of these, if you've got comments, send them out through the UBS address so that everybody can see them, and we'll get it narrowed down if that's the case, or added to if that's the case.
So seeing that, we will use Harvey's 24 points and get this email discussion going if needs, you know, if it needs change, if it needs augmenting within the structure. I mean, I don't mean the 24 points need an augmenting. I mean our discussion needs augmenting. I'm tired
points
now.
May need augmenting, by the way. Free to augment the points with other points.
So with that, let's incorporate this list and review these proposals, taking this stuff into account so that we can come, you know, fully prepared for the January 7th meeting in regards to these points of accuracy, reliability, anonymity, et cetera, et cetera.
And can we get a process for asking questions to the voting machine manufacturers, the vendors, other than having spoken them out over this microphone and hoping they're listening?
Yeah, I'll work on that, and we'll get a process for submitting questions.
Okay.
So, folks, on that note, I'm going to...
And let's talk about legislation. If we can, you're going to provide a report to us about legislation, or did you? Maybe you did already. Maybe we can ask the legislative subcommittee to communicate with us.
Yeah, I will send out what they've got.
Right. Okay, so we could have that conversation by email also.
Yes. So on that note, folks, it is 3:30, and I'm going to call this meeting to close for Monday, January 6th. I mean, Monday, December 16th, until we meet again on Tuesday, January 7th.
Thank you, Clarissa, for doing a wonderful job of keeping